Welcome to the Music Therapy Roundtable Podcast. We are your hosts, Rachel Rambach,
Michelle Erford,
Matt Logan,
and Kimberly Senna Moore.
We are four board-certified music therapists with a mission to empower you to take charge of your personal and professional growth. Join us each month as we talk shop and share stories, tips, and ideas about music therapy. Thanks for stopping by. Music therapists regularly interact with individuals and communities who are in some way in the minority. Whether due to disability, circumstance, or some other reason, it's part of our professional and ethical responsibility to be informed about and sensitive to the needs of these communities. In this 58th episode of the Music Therapy Roundtable Podcast, we are excited to chat with Annette Whitehead Plow, one of the music therapists who spearheaded the development of best practice standards related to the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and questioning, or LGBTQ, community. But first, a little about Annette. Having worked in music therapy for over 20 years, Annette Whitehead Plow currently teaches at St. Mary of the Woods College and works with pediatric burn patients at Shriners Hospitals for Children, Boston. There, she provides clinical services that focus on pain management, anxiety management, reduction in trauma symptoms, body image, improving fine and gross motor skills, and quality of life issues. Annette has conducted a variety of clinical research on the effects of music therapy on pain and anxiety. She has also written about using music-assisted technology into music therapy practice and multicultural issues. She's very active in the American Music Therapy Association as the current Speaker of the Assembly of Delegates, co-chair of the Standards of Clinical Practice Committee, a member of the Financial Approval Committee, a member of the Music Therapy Perspectives Editorial Board, and on several work groups. She has a passion for knitting and being a mom. Thank you so much for being on the show, Annette.
Well, thank you so much for having me here. It's an honor to be on the show with the four of you.
Oh, thank you. So I want to make sure I say the full name of this article that we're talking about, because we haven't really said it yet in our intro. And that is, first of all, this article came from the 2012 issue 2 of Music Therapy Perspectives. And the title is Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender, and Questioning Best Practices in Music Therapy. And it looks like this article was a huge undertaking, and it was conducted by a research team of 9 music therapists. So I want to take a minute to name everyone that was involved. And so that would be yourself, Amy Donenworth, Beth Robinson, Spencer Hardy, Leah Oswanski, Michelle Fornash, Maureen Hearns, Natasha Anderson, and Elizabeth York. Did I get everyone?
Yes, that's everybody.
Okay.
On that article. Yeah, it's a big group of people.
Right. You guys must have been really organized to make that happen.
I guess we were.
So before we even get into the topic, can we start with the term best practices? Since this is a best practices in music therapy type of article, what does best practices mean?
So yeah, it's a term that I don't know that we've used a great deal in music therapy yet. So in other fields of psychology and medicine and such, best practices is what you aim for the very best that you can do. And so if you think of like the documents we have, like the code of ethics lines out everything that we're supposed to be doing that's, you know, right. And if the standards of clinical practice outlines the bare minimum of what we need to do to be a music therapist, and best practices is what we shoot for to be the very best we can be.
Okay, so a best practice, if I see someone's telling me these are best practices, I should think this is how to be the top gold star.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. Okay. Well, then I need to know that because I always want to be the best I can be. Okay, so
too.
I know. Well, let's hope. So to the topic at hand, like we mentioned earlier, there were 9 of you involved in developing these particular best practice recommendations to help ensure that music therapists are informed about issues and needs relevant to the LGBTQ community. What brought all of you together to even start with studying this topic?
What happened was, I don't know, is several years ago at the, I presented at the Austin conference, the conference in Austin, Texas, the music therapy one, whenever that was. And my wife presented with me on heterosexism in music therapy. And during that presentation, we talked about best practices from psychology and some other fields and in regards to LGBTQ people. And somebody said, you know, do we have that in music therapy? And I said, no, we don't. And they were like, well, you should write it. And so
that's how you got on the list.
Right. Yeah, that's, well, that you know, from that, I was like, well, I should write this. And so periodically I would sit down and try to start writing it, but I realized that this is much bigger than me and much bigger than one person can do. And so, yeah, other things would come across my path and I did them, but it was always in the back of my mind. And then at the San Diego conference, I presented with my colleague. And afterwards, Amy Donner came up and started to talk to me about our presentation about multicultural assessment. And she talked about her work with LGBTQ youth. And so the more we talked, I was like, this lady's really smart. I'd like to work with her. And so I was like, hey, would you be interested in doing this? And she's like, oh, my colleague Beth Robinson, she would love this too. Can we all do it together? I was like, sure. But Amy lives in Ohio and Beth is in California and I'm in Massachusetts. And so we started talking over the phone. And as we, even right early on in our phone conversations, we were like, yeah, this is too big for the three of us. So we then made a list of people that we thought would be good to join. And we started calling everybody and asking them to join us. And we ended up with 9 people in the group. At that time. Now we have one other member that works with us.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what are these particular best practice standards based on? And, you know, how did you even create them since this is something new?
So what we did was that we were across the country, so every 2 weeks we had a phone call, a conference call, where we'd talk at lunchtime. Well, lunchtime, my time. Other time periods. And we started researching what are the best practices in all different fields. And we looked at psychology, we looked at homeless, LGBT youth, best practices, elder care with older LGBTQ people. We looked at medical. All sorts of documents as we read them and then start looking at what are the best practices that we want to bring into music therapy. And I think it was a period of 2 years it took us to create this document over many, many phone calls.
And it's, you guys are so thorough, which, I mean, well, best practices have to be thorough, but I mean, when I look at the list, because, well, let me tell a little story. One thing that I'm realizing, I guess, the older I get as a music therapist is how, or maybe even just personally, that I'm using all these terms, I don't necessarily know what they mean, and luckily, I guess, I'm getting old enough to realize what I don't know kind of thing. And best practices, that term is one of them. It wasn't until I knew that we were going to be talking about this that I really thought, wow, I don't really know what that is. And when I read through your article and saw just how thorough it is, I mean, you have a list of recommended clinical practices and recommended work environment best practices, recommended best practices for education and clinical training. And so it really goes to show how involved it is to be the gold star standard, to be the best music therapist that you can be. And so it's kind of like I'm seeing this article in two ways, from the back end with what you all did with collaborating and creating it, and then the front end for all of us to act on it and provide the best practices.
Yeah, and I hope you, I don't want to come across it like we think that we're the best and all be all, because we certainly don't. And then the group of us, we're just a group of people who wanted to move music therapy forward, and we're, you know, and we're a group of LGBTQ and ally people who wanted to make sure that we were treating our students and coworkers and clients and family members of our clients in the best possible way. And but we're always open to more ideas and better ideas.
But you need the starting point, and that's what your article provides.
Yeah, it's definitely a starting place. And we hope that it's also a starting place to open up discussions about best practices with other cultural groups and, you know, different groups. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that this can be a place to grow for all our field.
So now that we've all read the article, everyone in the planet, are there like 3 to 5 main points or takeaways on working with folks to help be sensitive to the needs of the LGBTQ community that you would want to really point out to us?
Sure. I talked with my colleagues, texted them all before the interview to be like, oh my God. one of the ones that most everybody said is that to not make assumptions about people, don't assume that they're LGBTQ and don't assume that they're straight either. And don't assume gender based on appearance. It's really important to not make those assumptions. And there's preconceived notions. That's definitely one big point. It's very important to be to recognize that sexual orientation and gender identity are very separate things that were lumped together as a group, but there's a lot of separation between that, and there's very different cultures within the whole group, the whole lumping of people. It's not truly a cohesive group of people beyond our group. We're lumped together, but there's a lot of different cultures and different needs within those groups. A third takeaway point would be, if you're truly an ally, to make it known. And if you want to be an ally, like to learn how to be an ally, and that's not just to say, oh, I want to be an ally, so I'm going to, but there's trainings you can seek out that can teach you the ways to be an ally, how to be open and affirming in your practice, how to be supportive. And if you already are an ally, to make it known through stickers or through your language or things, so your clients or your coworkers or your students know that you're a safe person to talk with. Because especially for our students, that's a very vulnerable age range in the LGBT community for bullying and resulting in suicide attempts and completion of suicide more frequently than the straight people. And so, oh, go ahead.
Oh, because being an ally is more than just personally being supportive or open. It's more than that. It's about what?
Being an ally, there's many steps to it, and there's actually some really cool research models out there about the different steps of development of becoming an ally, from being very homophobic all the way to being a super fantastic ally. But part of being an ally is using the right... like the right pronoun with the LGBTQ community is to use the right pronouns and to be knowledgeable about the community, knowledgeable about the needs of the community, know some about the history, and maybe since we're music therapists, know about the music within the different groups, the different cultures within the community, to know to know about being open and affirming in your practice, and to also to another part of being an ally for any group, a social justice ally, I guess, would be that you're not complacent in that, because when in not silent when things are going on around you, it really demands, being an ally demands us to, if it's a safe enough situation, to step up and be the person who says that's not cool to talk to call people gay, and you know, and to put yourself out there and to start shaping society and make those differences, and only if it's a safe situation.
Right.
You don't need to be an ally who's hurt, you know.
Great. Right. Okay. Any more points, main points or takeaways?
Sure. That it's really important to be kind of familiar with the resources in your community and online. There's fantastic online resources now and nationwide resources in many of the large communities that are like large cities like Boston, LA, you know, the big cities in the States, that there's great resources and in many of the small cities as well. Mm-hmm. But to know what those resources are and have those ready for your students or clients or coworkers if they should need some help. And and to get educated, one thing that we saw within our, we did a survey, you know, you guys might remember filling that out, getting it in your email.
I remember getting that one. I remember filling that one out.
It was a big survey.
It was big.
It was like a year and a half ago or something. And in that, we're still working on writing it up, but in it we've been doing some analysis, and we've seen that people say that they're comfortable working with LGBTQ people, but then they say that they don't have any training in it, and they don't have any education about it, and they don't seek supervision about it, and they don't know anything about the culture or the music, and but still they're okay working. And that we also threw in there a question about open and affirmative practice, and what are three aspects of that, and a lot of people were not able to, said that they were open and affirming, but they weren't able to list actual open and affirming practices, and so it really gave us an indication that music therapists are very good people, but they don't know what they don't know.
Right.
I'm not being judgmental or anything. I don't know what I don't know either, and I'm certainly not the queen of multiculturalism. I put my foot in it all the time, but it's really important for us to seek out like supervision and training and to change our coursework and for our students, so they are exposed to not just LGBTQ cultural things, but to, about all the populations within, mm-hmm. you know, to change our practices so we're better at meeting our clients where they are.
And to be completely honest with you, everything that you're saying about that survey coming back and music therapists saying this and that kind of thing, I am your spokesperson of that music therapist. Because I definitely have a lot to learn, and I'm so, everything you said about being an ally is more than just personally being supportive and about stepping up and all of those resources that you have and that are out there. You know, that's that next step that I know I need to take, but I didn't know that until I even started reading your article and started just learning more and being a part of the Facebook group and all of that. So I'm really thankful that you're doing this research, because it's going to point me in better directions so that I can, you know, be well-rounded and be the kind of music therapist I want to be, you know, and all of that.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I feel like, and I had that feeling today in one of my sessions. I was doing it, and I was like, I really don't know anything. The more I learn, I feel like the less I know.
Yeah, that's how I am a lot. A lot of the time.
But there's so much to learn from our clients and from our coworkers and our colleagues and in books and journals and things too. Yeah.
And the thing, for a long time, I didn't admit when I didn't know something, but I don't know what happened to me. I got brave or something, and I started saying it out loud and saying the things that I don't know and telling people, and it's been the best thing I could have ever done, is because now I'm finally learning. I'm not hiding in some cloud, you know, now I can learn, and people always help when you say you don't know something.
Yeah, we have a very international population, so there's really no way for me to know about every culture, because it's just beyond me. And that work has really forced me to go into clients' rooms and be like, you know, I have no idea about the music of Senegal, and I don't know anything about your culture, so could you please, like, tell me? And I'd be glad to help you and your child out in any way I can, but I need some help first. And I felt kind of like a big bozo the first time I did it, but if it's coming at it from a place of true intention to learn and to want to help, I think that people are open to talking. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And speaking of that, of support, one thing that we're going to talk more in our cool resource of the month is the Music Therapy LGBTQ Allies Connection Facebook group. Mm-hmm. And we have a little paragraph that we'll be sharing about it later, but I know you're on the group. Are you one of the moderators, or does it not do that?
No, we have we call ourselves Team Rainbow,
okay.
The group that is, which is all those previously mentioned people, and then Shirley Tan is also part of our group now. And I believe that all of us are moderators on the group. And there's not been a lot of action there lately, but we definitely share interesting things that are going on, and we're there to be a resource. For our ally music therapy friends, and then for LGBTQ intersex asexual music therapists when we presented this the first time in Atlanta, Georgia conference, about 200 people came to the presentation, which was quite surprising. And during the question and answer part at the end, there were several, and afterwards, several like music therapy students and interns and young professionals came to us and said, you know, until I saw you guys present, I didn't know that I thought I was the only one. And we were all so shocked to hear that. And also remembered that when we were younger and before we found a community in music therapy. And so we wanted to make sure and to use the resources we have now with the electronic media technology to so people don't feel alone anymore. We know that we're here and that we're, you know, ready to lend an ear or anything we can.
This wraps up the roundtable portion of the podcast, but Annette will also be sharing specific resources music therapists can use to expand their knowledge of LGBTQ issues over on our premium website, musictherapypro.com. This pro conversation is only available to our pro community, who also have access to a members-only forum, resource lists, videos, exclusive podcasts, and discounts with select members. CMTE courses are also available to community members at no additional charge. At Music Therapy Pro, we've done the hard work already. Now we're sharing our secrets with you. Join the community at www.musictherapypro.com. This month's cool resource of the month gels quite well with our topic, and this is the Music Therapy LGBTQ/Allies Connection Facebook. This is a closed Facebook group that was created as a place for music therapists, both who are LGBTQ and their allies. And this is a forum where they can ask questions, share stories, offer support, and engage in discussions. You can find the link to this group through our website, which we'll make available, musictherapyroundtable.com.
We'd like to give a shout out to our Pro Perk partners. Music Therapy Pro members receive discounts on products and services from Metro Music Therapy's Paper, Music Therapy eBooks, Music Therapy Mailings, Wholesome Harmonies Music Therapy, A Perfect Lullaby, the Music Therapy Research Blog, Boom Totes, Listen and Learn, and the Music Therapy Maven. Thank you for your support.
Thank you for joining us. To see the show notes, go to www.musictherapyroundtable.com. If you like this podcast, take your skills to the next level by joining the Music Therapy Pro community. For only $17 per month, you will get unlimited access to CMTEs, in-depth clinical skills podcasts, and other invaluable resources designed to empower you to take charge of your personal and professional growth.